Second, despite the military forces under our control here, the system, as soon as it has tidied up some of its present military morale problems, will be able to pound us into the ground by conventional means with very little trouble. The only thing that's really kept them off us this long has been our threat of nuclear reprisal against New York and Tel Aviv. Third, our nuclear threat is in grave danger of being neutralized. The system has the capability for launching a surprise first strike against us with a high probability of knocking out all our hardened launch silos before we can fire our missiles. Revolutionary Command's intelligence sources indicate that such a surprise strike is exactly what is being planned. The system is holding off only until it has finished an emergency military reorganization, which will give it confidence in the political reliability of the U.S. Army. It wants to follow up its destruction of our nuclear capability immediately with a massive invasion, which will finish us off in a day or two. Worse, the system has an alternative plan which calls for the nuclear annihilation of all of Southern California. It will carry out that plan if it fails to regain complete confidence in the reliability of its military ground forces within the next couple of weeks. We still don't know the system's exact timetable, but we have reports that more than 25,000 of the wealthiest and most influential Jews and their families have quietly packed up and left the New York area within the last 10 days, most of them taking only a moderate amount of luggage with them, perhaps enough for a 2 or 3 week vacation. Thus, our entire strategy against the system has been undermined. If we could hold the enemy off indefinitely, or even for a year or two, with our threat of nuclear retaliation, then we could pull him down. With California as a training and supply base, and with a population of more than 5 million whites to recruit from, we could steadily escalate our guerrilla war throughout the rest of the country. But without California, we can't do it, and the system knows that. So what we must do, immediately, is to disperse a large number of nuclear weapons outside California. We will then detonate at least one of those weapons to convince the system that a new situation exists. If the system attacks California after that, we will be obligated to detonate all or most of our dispersed weapons in an effort to destroy the system's capability for organized resistance. Unfortunately, much of the white population of the country is bound to be lost if we are forced to that extremity. The country will also be open to the danger of invasion by other nations, a grim prospect indeed. The next diary entry is dated September 4th, 1993. Although I've been in Washington nearly a week now, this is the first opportunity I've had to write. After our hectic trip across the country, we spent several hectic days getting two of our bombs planted. Then last night was the first uninterrupted night I've had alone with Catherine since I've been back, and tomorrow it's another bomb-planting mission. But tonight is for writing. Our trip here from California was like something from a zany movie. Even though all the events are still fresh in my mind, I can hardly believe they really happened. Conditions in this country have changed so much in the last 9 weeks that it's as if we had used a time machine to step into an entirely different era, an era in which all the old rules for coping we spent a lifetime learning have been changed. Fortunately for us, everyone else seems just as bewildered by the changes as we are. I was surprised at the ease with which we were able to leave our enclave. The system's troops are all clumped together in just a few border areas along the major highways, with additional company-sized groups stationed at roadblocks on the back roads. These back road troops are doing practically no patrolling, and it is a simple and safe matter to bypass them, which accounts for the fact that so many white volunteers have been able to infiltrate into our area of California since July 4th. We took an army truck north to Bakersfield, and then drove northeast another 20 miles to within half a mile of a roadblock manned by black troops. We could see them, and they could see us, but they didn't try to give us any trouble as we pulled off the main road onto a rough Forest Service trail. We were already in the foothills of the Sierra Range. After about an hour of bouncing over the steep, barely passable mountain road, we pulled back onto the highway again, safely beyond the roadblock, but now deep into system-controlled territory. We weren't especially concerned about running into any opposition in the mountains. We knew the largest concentration of system troops was at China Lake on the other side of the Sierras, and we intended to turn north along Highway 395 before then. Our plan, had we met a supply truck heading for the roadblock back near Bakersfield, was simply to blast it off the narrow mountain highway before its occupants realized we were the enemy. All five of us kept our automatic rifles cocked and ready, and we had two rocket launchers besides, but we met no other vehicles. We knew that, despite the unnatural absence of traffic in the mountains, we would certainly encounter heavy traffic when we reached 395, the main north-south highway east of the mountains. Our reconnaissance patrols hadn't been able to give us anything but a very generalized picture of troop dispositions that far east, and we had no idea what to expect in the way of roadblocks or other controls on vehicular traffic. We did know that fewer than 10% of the system troops in the border area at that time were whites, however. The system was gradually regaining confidence in some of its white troops, but it was still avoiding using them near the border, where they might be tempted to come over to our side. The few white military personnel in the area, even though confirmed race mixers, were regarded with suspicion and treated with the contempt they deserved by the blacks. Our spies had reported several instances in which these white renegades had been humiliated and abused by their black fellow soldiers. Considering this, we had decided that we would have a better chance as non-whites of bluffing our way past any challengers. Accordingly, we had all applied a dark stain to our faces and hands and pinned Chicano-sounding name tags on our fatigue uniforms. We figured we could pass as mestizos, so long as we didn't run into any real Chicanos. For 4 days, I was Jesus Garcia. Our driver, Corporal Rodriguez, played his role to the hilt, giving a left-handed clenched fist salute and flashing a toothy grin whenever we passed an idle group of black soldiers along the highway, and on the two occasions we were stopped at checkpoints.